Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we get started, wanted to let you know about the Union GK app. The Union GK believes that all goalkeepers, parents, and coaches should have access to personal mentoring, college recruiting, and training, which can be thousands of dollars annually. The Union breaks the barrier to entry to these offerings with a cost-effective subscription. So regardless of your location, your subscription allows you to connect with world-class professionals throughout the goalkeeping industry in a safe, intimate setting and receive unbiased feedback and guidance. For more info, go to theuniongk.com or download the app at the Union GK community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Majid, live from Hollywood, California. With me, former 99 World Cup winner, Saskia Weber. But we got to say, this weekend, she is one of the voices with Mark Rogondino of Bally Sports West's Angel City coverage, the one and only Saskia Weber. And the reason I'm saying that is because we have a returning guest, friend, co-founder, co-host, producer, social media guru of Inside the 18, the one and only Angel City goalkeeper coach, head of goalkeeping, the one and only Pro GK Academy himself, Omar Zini. What's up, dude? Very few people can get me up this early.
I was going to say, what an intro.
Wow, first of all, former. What do you mean I'm a former 99?
Well, I mean, did they take it away from me? like a Heisman situation.
I have to give my medal back? What is that?
Oh my gosh. You know, look, it honestly, for anyone who's listening right now, you guys know, a lot of you guys who watch the show all the time know, it is difficult to get me up early in the morning. This is very early in the morning for me, and it's 10 a.m. I know a lot of you guys are looking at the clock and going like, no, that's like the middle of the day for most people.
Yeah, we just lost like 50% of our viewers.
50% of the audience just left. But Omar Zini's been up since what, 3 in the morning?
No, today, yeah, I think 5:30 for breakfast for Ramadan.
Oh my gosh. By the way, Omar, do you have any lighting going on there? Because you are very dark.
Oh, am I?
Come on, yeah. Guru.
Yeah.
I have... Maybe I'm it's just the windows are all in weird places. Let me open this one, maybe this will help, but yeah.
This is amazing. This is a guy who's known for his social media content. And
he's not in the green room.
We can't see you.
With the turf.
If I come closer, maybe.
There you go.
Yeah, if you come closer, it gets a little bit better. You don't have a backlight?
I don't know. I haven't done any podcast in like 2 years. It's been a while.
It wasn't that long ago that I was there.
You had like a full professional setup as of last year.
I know. It's retired now, and obviously the last few months has been crazy. It's been a whirlwind. Coming into Angel City, I mean, I got the call, and then within like 4 or 5 days, you know, things happened. And when I called you, Mike, I called Saskia, like, you guys were so happy. And it was just such a, I don't know, such a proud moment, happy moment for me. Going to the conventions and doing all the, like, the not glorious things of trying to get our names out there. And, you know, our equipment being stolen on, like, Podcast Row. Remember that? Like, there's so many things that have happened to us. In Kansas City, yeah. And it's just, I don't know, full circle. So I was really happy to give you guys the call and obviously be here with you. But yeah, life has been awesome. I'll be honest with you. It's been great.
You know how excited I was.
I know. You guys, Mike was excited too. He was like, what?
I told Mike before you told him.
Like, oh, you did? Okay.
I hung up the phone and I called Mike immediately. I totally beat you to it.
I mean, I don't know. It's such a unique thing. Like, for me, it's like a hometown team, but also to one of the owners that I know so well is a, you know, World Cup champion as a goalkeeper. There's just so many like things that you look back on that makes sense, but obviously as it progressed, you're kind of like hoping for the best, hoping you, you know, kill interviews and do well. And then all of a sudden it happens and you're like, oh, okay. I don't know if Saskia had a word.
I had nothing to do with it. And so I was just going to say, so everybody out there, I didn't know any of this until Omar called me and he had gotten the job. I didn't know he was going for it. I didn't know he was up for it. And like totally out of left field for me. I remember talking to Mike going like, who are they going to find? Like once Dan left, like we were talked about it because like, I didn't, for me, honestly, because you were with LAFC. So it didn't even go into my brain that you would shift over. And so, yeah. So it was like, else I would have thought that immediately. And so no, I did not help. Although right after I found out, I did reach out to the big bosses, Julie Ehrman and Angela Hughes, and I was just like, good job, like thumbs up, like great. I did. I texted them right away. So.
But I know, Mike, I know the topics for today, but I think it's like LAFC, such a special time for me there, and getting the role there, working with Steve Cherundolo and some of the staff that I was able to work with, John Thorrington and people there. It was such a opportunity, you know, I live 5 minutes away, so it was so unique. And then when I got the call, it was one of those things where I was like, I don't know if I want to leave LAFC. Like, they've done so well by me and so right by me, and I've gotten so many opportunities and they look out for you there. And I was like, I don't want to burn any bridges. I don't want to do anything that's stepping out of line. And then when it's the first team calling, I think that is something that you have to, as a coach, who if you take yourself seriously, like, I love LAFC. It's close. It's not that far from me. But Angel City, you know, we're in Thousand Oaks. It's a little bit more of a drive. I love living in the place that I live. Do I move if I get the job? So many conversation pieces. Yeah, there's so many pieces. But then again, you keep circling back and you say, why did I become a coach? It's to coach players at the highest level. And there are more consequences for sure when you're, you know, coaching in a first team environment. You know, you get one thing wrong, you're 1 degree imperfect, and then the other team is 1 degree perfect on the day. Then all of a sudden, now you're kind of looking over your shoulder like, okay, someone's going to tap me and say, hey, it's got to be better. So it was an opportunity that I couldn't pass on. And as a young coach, you kind of like, you're hungry for these opportunities. And when it came, I was like, no brainer. And so, yeah, that's why I took it.
I also think for you, you know, this women's sports, let's just be blunt, it's just exploding and across the board. I mean, I have my, you know, hockey league jersey, t-shirt, sweatshirt on right now that they sent all the 99ers, like, and their league is selling out ice hockey stadiums. And like, you're, I wouldn't say you're on the ground of something, because obviously we've been trying to do women's pro soccer and stuff in the United States for a long time, but it's just like such like a, like, it's exploding. And so when I think you're just like, you got yourself in there at a great time, you know, and this can take you anywhere as well. Like, you know, whether, you know, 10, I don't ever want to lose you, but 10, 15 years, I don't know, 10, from now, you decide to go, like, you know, to Europe and coach, or you decide to go back to the men's side, or you decide to, you know, go to another team or something like that, or something changes. But I think that it was a great move for you. And I don't think it was like, I don't want anybody out there to think, oh, he was with LAFC. He took a step down and went with Angel City, because we will have a fight right now, because I think it was a step up, because you were with second team, and yeah. It's at the least a lateral move. But I definitely,
I think it's a step up.
Yeah. It's a step up.
It's a step up. Yeah, I think if you talk to anybody, yeah.
Yeah. If, like, anybody out there, we sell out the stadium too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's your point?
You know? Yeah. No, I think, I mean, LAFC, look, it's what it's done in its short history. It's incredible, unprecedented. Mm-hmm. And being there for 3 seasons, the first season, you know, Bob, it didn't work out well. They didn't make the playoffs for the first year. For the first time, and then Steve takes over. They win it their first year, get to the final last year. So for me, I'm stepping into an environment where you're kind of like seeing all types of scenarios for what a pro club looks like. And that year they won it, you know, there were some rough stretches, and I would talk to Steve, and his cadence of how he speaks to you, and like, he's always so calm. And you would always, I would always be like, well, first team environment, it has to be this and this and this. But then Steve taught me that you can also have the balance of, you know, having composure and recognizing that, like, just because you lose one game or three, four games and the press is on you, the fans are on you, it doesn't mean that you have to throw everything tactically out the room. So I think that was something that I learned at LAFC. And all the lessons that I was learning at LAFC, I was excited about, because I'm like, you know, these are great opportunities for me to actually execute them one day. And then when the second team, you're around it enough time, you're kind of like, I love it, but we're not the priority. We're always secondary to the first team. And I get it 100%. But as a coach, you're kind of like, I want to go to every single game expecting to win because of the work that we're putting in. And I know the work that we're putting in. And Enrique Duran, who was our head coach, Steven Campos with the second team, the standard was always so high. But sometimes we would lose our best players because the first team had injuries or Right. The first team had too many games. So coming to Angel City, it was like, it's the priority. It's the only team in the building. It's a first team environment. All the resources, Everything is being poured into us. And for me, at the stage of my career and experiencing what I experienced, I'm like, this is the level up that I've always wanted, where You're going in with your big guns every single game, obviously barring any injuries, but your big guns come with you everywhere you go. And that was something that I had to say yes to. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think this is the longest I've gone without talking on this podcast.
I know. In five years.
I was like, Omar and Suske could just do the podcast.
I have to be careful. I'm like, I got to call the game, and I know that Becky Tweed will kill you if I ask any. I'm like, I have so many questions I need to ask. I have our coach's call Saturday morning. But I'm like, I'll hold my tongue on it. It's okay.
well, kind of before we get into the topic, and that is about entering the first, first team environment, you know, after being in a developmental environment and everything like that, Omar, I just kind of want to, you know, talk to you just in regards to like this entire journey, because I know you were at a crossroads a few years back where you were like, do I want to be a content creator or do I want to be a professional coach? And that was a tough decision for you in which direction you wanted to go, right?
Yeah, 100%. It was, yeah, your heart is taking you in both directions, you know, because of what the podcast was for us and going to shows and going to different things where we're really getting our name out there. You're fighting like two battles where like I'm putting so much time into the content side, but it's also giving me opportunities to network with top coaches and have conversations with people who give you insight during COVID, especially where everybody was doing a webinar and giving you, you know, Champions League, in Europe, women's side, men's side, giving you ideas of like, I want to execute this one day. So it was such a double-edged sword for me. And then obviously when opportunities come, I think, you know, Mike, speaking with you and Suske as well, like you guys were always telling me, continue to push both sides. But at the same time, like when an opportunity comes, don't be dumb. Like, don't feel like because you have this as an opportunity and this great one comes that you have to say, I want to, you know, continue pushing. You have two cups. And whichever one produces more for you, you have to take. And I think the content side was great. I loved it. It was amazing. It helped me, again, meet people, network, meet people like you, build relationships. But then with the coaching side as well, it like my heart was aching for it, where I didn't have a lot of opportunities as a player once my career ended and not going pro and things like that. But I was hungry for that environment of like, what does a preparation look like game week? You have your rival coming to the stadium. What does that look like? And with the second team, you know, we played Galaxy 2 every now and again, but their players were taken by the first team. Our players were taken by the first team. And it was essentially an academy game. And you get excited for those games, but you don't get the same excitement that I would now with Angel City versus San Diego, Angel City versus the Bay. And like, those are moments that like my family, God willing, will be at the stadiums. And those are things that content creation, I loved it. But like this yields so much more for me in that area. And it checks off so many boxes for me as a young player of dreams that I had of feeling emotion in a stadium. And I think that is what drove me in essence to where I'm at now, really, with professional coaching.
Hold on, Omar, God willing, they'll be at the stadium. They live like 15 minutes from the stadium. Like,
I know.
Like, leave early.
I know. My grandpa has like, he gets headaches really easily. And my mom and everyone was like excited that he would come. And then my mom saw like the promotional ad today. I don't know if you saw it. So it's like on Instagram, it's like the, where it's the preview for the weekend. And my mom was like, no, no chance. Your grandfather's not going to be able to make this one. It's too loud. It's
the fan fest and all that stuff. And probably sold out BMO. And even with the game switching days, like, yeah, I know. Cause I just had to do the promo for Three Things to Know. Yeah, no, it's, Grandpa will get there and he'll love it.
No, I know. Well, but yeah, I think, it's being from LA, guys, like, I don't know. You can't really explain having your family in the stadium or seeing you at work. It's just my friends too, who I'm like, I see them tonight and like, they're all excited for the game, for the first game. It's Ramadan, so not many are coming and it's sold out. So tickets are expensive, but then you have like April 21st, our next game at home. So it's like, you have my friends now who know what I do can finally want to come to games. And
yeah, I like, won't be able to be at that one either. Cause I'm calling that one as well.
Well, I'll wave up to you in the stands and I know that it'll be a celebration. Well, no, I'll look straight into the booth.
Remember, we call from Florida.
Oh,
so Mark and I have to fly to Vista in Florida to the studio to call the game in LA, and we're both in LA.
Interesting.
Yeah. Hey, Omar, you didn't know that all the NWSL games and MLS games and everything were all called in Florida?
They do a great job of hiding it. I mean, it looks.
That's not true, Mike. The MLS now, their teams, a lot of them are at games because of Apple Plus and stuff. Okay. Some of the NWSL games will be on site, but a good majority are called out of studio. So
gotcha. Mm. Okay, gotcha.
So I wanted to clear that up to everybody, but I'll be in Florida.
By the way, I think, you know, one of the really cool things about this in regards to like, you know, getting into that first team environment and Omar and everything like that is that there's just such a culture now around Angel City and everything like that. It's like, I mean, it's so funny to me how like worlds can collide and everything. It's like, I've got all of a sudden like, you know, comedian friends and like entertainment lawyer friends and like producer friends and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, they're like, hey, do you mind if we meet him and stuff like that? And it's like, what? Like, you want to meet Omar? Like, what's going on here? And shout out to you for connecting with them over in Palm Desert or Indio for the Coachella Invitational and stuff like that. But that's kind of a cool thing. People don't kind of come to the LAFC2, you know, developmental, you know, environments and go like, oh man, I really want to meet the goalkeeper coach.
No, but it's, I think that was the beauty of the social media side is that people knew who I was here in LA. So like whenever they would come to like Cal State LA games, like we would play teams and people would be like, after in the handshake cuddles, would be like, oh, I know you. And I'm like, me? And they're like, yeah, I watch your stuff. And it's like, you have to remind yourself that because of the beauty of social media, you can actually access and meet people from all across the world for those moments. But I think, I think that was a cool piece to the puzzle for me of like, I'm not just influencing, you know, my friends who watch my content, but like the goalkeepers all around the country or goalkeepers everywhere. And then obviously during COVID, like so many coaches. Oh, there's Todd Hofford. That's one of the coaches too. And now that I have Todd here, hopefully he's listening. But that was like the first coach that, Mike, remember this? We were at Mobile Mini Cup. We used to go to Arizona all the time. And everybody who doesn't know, it's like preseason where USL teams, MLS teams, I think NWSL teams now go to Arizona. But we were... Todd was the nicest guy. I was like, okay, MLS goalkeeper coach wants to just like hang out with us at the hotel and like, you know, come hang out and chill. And we'd go there, talk soccer for like hours. And then he'd be like, yeah, come to my training session tomorrow. I got this guy. We're doing like a little regen sesh, but like come through. And we were like, okay, do you mind if we film? And I was like, he was like, yeah, absolutely. No problem. Like, but it was like opening the doors and having access to a top goalkeeper coach that like blew my mind of like, there are great people out there who want to not just share their ideas, but want to like help you succeed. And it was something that I filmed, and that video has so many views over the years and so many like parents, coaches, everyone saying, I want that type of training. I want that type of service. Todd probably missed one ball the entire time, hit 200 balls, 300 balls, missed one service the entire session. And for any young goalkeeper coaches who were like, wow, that's the standard shit. I'm not going to make it. Or some goalkeeper coaches who were like, no, I won't miss one ball. But it was like that moment where I was so surprised by someone being so open and so like just so cool. So Todd, since you're listening, I've always wanted to thank you. I probably told you through text 10 times, but that was the first, that was the first coach. And now whenever anybody from media or anyone wants to come film my stuff, I'm like, yeah, 100%. Like if I look bad or if I miss a kick, no big deal. Like I trust you that you're not going to show it. But at the same time, like I want to open those doors as coaches have done for me.
Yeah, it's like, you know, like same as like Mike, like think about when you went, when we for the Union were down San Diego and you went for, to TKI, you know, and you know, you had a handful of Haracich was down there, right? Was it Sheridan Haracich? You had a handful of NWSL keepers training with Jill and TKI and just opening that door to people to tape, to do a podcast, to kind of reach more people. That's what we've all been about. My pleasure, Omar.
Well, you know, it's funny that you said that, Omar, because, you know, in regards to that, I'm just kind of just like thinking about like, you know, when I've been doing mentor sessions on the Union or other coaches and everything like that, I think at the beginning, a lot of young players were sending like the best of the best footage of themselves. And it's like, that's not what the whole point of mentoring is. The whole point of mentoring is to grow and learn and to keep getting better. So if you're just trying to show me your like your best, like we're not going to improve. I want to see the mistakes. I want to see the, you know, where your starting position was off, you know, like how you mishandled that cross and everything like that. Cause that's how you're going to grow. And like, I think, you know, one of the things, Omar, that, you know, you've talked about before in the past is like, sometimes as a, even as a young coach, like the insecurity of like, oh, I want everyone to think I'm amazing. I'm perfect. But you're, that's not how you get to the first team level.
No, absolutely not. And I mean, that's just it's the reality. And I think that when you want opportunities as a young coach, and sometimes they come very early and maybe you're not ready for them. Like I remember when Steve got the head coaching job at LAFC, I remember I texted him early in the new year and I said, congratulations. And he said, it's like maybe a Sunday. And he said, Omar, on Tuesday, I'm going to be in the office, swing by. And I remember thinking, oh crap, like he's going to offer me this job. Like I'm going to be a goalkeeper coach for the first team at 27 or 28. I was so excited. And then I got there and obviously right from the start, I was kind of like, okay, this is not going to happen. His tone, but he was like, Omar, look, you know, I enjoyed working with you. However, in this very moment, you know, we're going to go with somebody else. And, you know, I'm excited for you to be with the second team. There's going to be an expanded role, you know, dealing with scouting reports and things like that. So just, you know, I'm excited for you there. But if anything, when we're, whoever we do hire on, Oka Nikolov is who ended up, you know, being hired. He's like, I will make sure that when you ask to come to sessions, he will hopefully say, yes, I'm going to open the door for you and give you an opportunity to be in that environment. And I remember I went for my first session. I was so nervous. I missed maybe like two or three services to Max and John. And I thought in my head that I was having a panic attack. And in that moment, I was like, well, I'm not ready. Like, I don't think I'm ready for this. And then I kept showing up and Oka kept saying like, hey, if today you're going to be, you know, drawing up the session, whatever you do in the session, I will support. Do not look at me to say, coach, is that right? Or is that coaching point okay? I want to see what you have so that whenever I send a goalkeeper down to you, I know what they're getting. And I know what's coming out in terms of the production from you. And sure enough, you know, fast forward 3 years now, there's still moments in sessions where I'm, you know, my service isn't great, but all those years of being, you know, working with the first team in their preseasons and helping them and having Oka support me and say, yeah, it was a rough day, Omar, but tomorrow I want you to take Max. Tomorrow I want you to take John. I want you to clean up those services, but I'm behind you. I'm supporting you 100%. And it's like, again, paying it forward, but like, you sometimes think as a young coach that you are ready for opportunities, and maybe you are. Maybe it's just me. Mentally, I probably could have overcome some things. But when you actually look back and you're like, wow, I didn't have the emotional maturity. I didn't have the awareness.
Well, it goes back to that story you always say of walking into the office and saying, well, I think I'm one of the top 10 goalkeeper coaches in the world.
That was the first coach, actually, Chris Chamadis. I mean, big mentor for me, but you know, he was at Cal State LA for so many years. We won so many trophies, and then he went to LMU Women's, rebuilding the program there. But I remember going into the office, and I was telling him what my aspirations were. I had social media, I had this, and he was like, "Omar, look, at some point, you know, you're going to have to choose between social media and between coaching." And he's like, "In this moment, what do you think?" And I said, look, I think as a content creator, I do a good job. I have X amount of followers. It's great. But as a goalkeeper coach, look, I would say, arguably, that I'm one of the top goalkeeper coaches in the world, maybe. And he was like, he looked at me like, respect, you can hear pin drop, you know? I was like, respectfully, Omar, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. You're not even one of the top 10 coaches in California. And I was like, I was shocked. And I was, I mean, look, I was 26. And it's false. I mean, it's false confidence when you post on social media. I mean, I told the story before, when you have 30,000 followers and you say you're going to have a camp and then no one signs up and you're kind of just like, well, doesn't, I was like, doesn't this yield a certain number of, you know, submissions or call-ups? And it didn't. And it was like embarrassing, but it was also a step for me to be like, okay, you got to stop talking like you are the guy and start acting like you are and start working towards that. And yeah, at Big Joe, for example, at Impact Goalkeeper Academy, like one of those guys who's all business, knows how to take an idea and execute it. And that guy, man, instrumental in like pulling me to the side and saying, hey, nephew, he calls me nephew. He's like, nephew, that session was not good enough. Your voice is too quiet. The players aren't responding to you. Like all these things. And I'm like, I'm 25, 26. I don't even know this guy. I knew him growing up, but like I never worked with him. And then for somebody like that to really like jump into me and drill into me like that, invite me to camps and put me with the young kids and challenge me in ways I've never been challenged. Again, it's like so many people that I have to thank. So, yeah.
You know, what? Go ahead, Susk.
I was going to say, so talk about the transition over to Angel City and how has all of that helped? Like, I'm asking a question. I never ask a question. Mike said I ask a question. But I'm trying to ask it like without like digging too much.
Hey, if Saskia understood how to use the tech, I wouldn't even have to be here. I could go to sleep. It'd be amazing.
No, but how has all of that helped with the transition? And now, like being at Angel City, you're not looking over your shoulder in a sense. Do you feel that you are? I mean, you know, like you've been given the reins, and you're, you know,
yeah,
top goalkeeper coach.
Yeah, I think. It was something so silly, but they like printed out my plaque. It said Omar Zini, head of goalkeeping. They put it on my desk and it was like a pinch me moment. Like all the times I've interviewed the top people and sat with them and had conversations with them. And now all of a sudden now, like those roles that I was so keen on interviewing, now my name is attached to that. And it takes, obviously there's a lot of more responsibility. There's a lot more attention to detail, but every step of the way I've learned something that has gotten me to where I'm at. And at LAFC, even though we had a short staff, our head coach never used that as an excuse. Enrique Duran was always saying, Omar, I need these scouting reports to be better. And I'm like, well, I don't really know formations. I don't really know. He's like, okay, then study it. I don't really give a crap. Like, you're going to come to me with a presentation and give me everything that I need because I don't have anybody else. You have to do it. And he's like, I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be patient with you and sit with you and take care of it. But I want you to feel like I'm not giving you attention for you to give me nothing in return. So that attention to detail was something that with my sessions now, or just everything that I do, I want to come prepared because I know that the standard has been set and I can't look back. I can't go back to where and how my processes were before that. And then it's a funny story, but last year, LAFC, I had one opportunity to go with the first team to Charlotte. Oka was he was at a wedding in Germany. So I had them from like Tuesday to Friday. Friday we left, we played Saturday. And I warmed the goalkeepers up. My volley, the first two volleys that I hit, terrible. John was like reaching to the side. And then the next ones, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to go back to my half volley. So I was like, okay, I have an extra tool in the toolbox that I can use. Half volleys were hitting. I go to corners. I miss a corner, like not terribly, but not bad. A camera guy looks at me and says, come on, man, you could do better. And I was like, oh, the next I was like, no, I can't. He goes, yeah, no. We're just trying to get some good shots. Make them look good so we can get some good shots. So in the moment, my insecurity of like, shit, am I ready for this? To a camera guy, like sparking an insecurity that I didn't even know was like present in the moment. But it was that moment where I was like, okay, one bad service. And I hit like two or three really good ones after. And then I moved to the higher position. I hit two or three really good ones. And it was that like, oh, okay, I can have one bad service and that's okay. But I also have an understanding of I can bounce back quicker than I thought I could. I actually right. have it in me. So again, it's like all those moments and experiences. And like, I remember at Cal State LA, Chris Chamedes, there was moments where my session, the plan, like how I set it up didn't look great. a cone was off one way or was not straight. And he would come to me and say, look, this is not acceptable at the professional level. You would never present this to Bob Bradley. You would never present this to anybody. Why are you presenting it to me like this? Fix it. And it's like all those little details of people who I think you look back on who are hard on you. You hate it in the moment. You cry to your friends. You come home and you complain. But then you actually like wake up one morning and you're like, I'm so thankful that they did that to me, because now I'm self-correcting versus somebody coming to me and trying to set the standard where I already have it. So I think all those things up until this point have been amazing. And I mean, you guys too, like sounding boards. I mean, how many times did I ask for advice? How many times did I come to you? Maybe I thought it was a stupid question, but you guys were like, no, don't worry. We're going to absorb the stupid question. We're going to give you a proper answer. But it's like you guys both have incredible experiences in your field. So I think for me, it was such a great opportunity to have a sounding board like you guys. So again, I'm so blessed to have a community of people that I can come to. And then now when I go to Angel City, hopefully I've answered most, or I've had a lot of those questions answered, but there will be a lot of questions that are going to come up. And I know I have a community of people to go to.
So I want to kind of get into like a little bit more of the meat and potatoes, as John Bush would say, of this right here, Omar, because I think a lot of people out there, you know, first off, in regards to like the self-correction thing, I think one of the biggest problems, and it's very difficult when you don't have a sounding board and you're on island and everything like that, is that like you're self-diagnosing. So you're like, oh, if no one is giving me any sort of instruction or any feedback, I'm just assuming everything's going great. Or if I am not getting any feedback and instruction, I just assume that this must be going terrible. So like you really do need people around you, you know, whether it's the first team level or the developmental level, that are willing to be open with you about what they're seeing, positive and negative, right?
100%. And it's like a saying, right? It's like, I say wisdom, or I forget what it's called, but it's like planting trees of which you will never see the roots of, or you'll never see the finishing picture. And I think that is such a, like, based on my college, like going from my private sessions to Cal State LA, to LAFC, Las Vegas Lights, and then LAFC when we switched to MLS Next Pro, now to Angel City. Somebody along the way saw my bad habits in every stop and was like, I am going to change you for the better. I don't care if there's friction in our relationship, but I'm going to change you for the better. And it's almost like a representation of them when I go to the next place. And I feel like whenever I half-ass maybe certain videos or whatever, I'm like, Enrique's in my head saying, if you present this to me, you're out the door. I'm not even going to even entertain this. Cal State LA, if my session isn't like set up properly, Chris will look at me and say, this is ridiculous. So I feel like that self-correction comes from people who have poured into me and said, I'm going to be the bad guy in this area, in this moment of your life, so that the next person can get a more sound, more completed, polished individual.
But it takes a certain type of person to be able to accept that. And the reason I'm saying that is because, you know, had you not been that type of person and that arrogant kid that at 26 that walked in saying, well, I think I'm one of the best goalkeepers in the world, you know, and not listening, you wouldn't have a job right now. You know, you would just be on social media and you wouldn't have a job because you wouldn't have taken the advice. You wouldn't have gotten humbled. You wouldn't have worked on all those little things. You know, your setup, how does it look? You know, your self-correction. Okay, your services, you're this, you're that. You know, to be able to take that constructive criticism and grow from it is why you're where you are now. And so not everybody has that. And if you don't, like, just know that you're like anybody out there, if you're that arrogant, which you should never be, you're going to have a short career. I'm
just telling you. Let's kind of like show kind of like the progression, because like, I think a lot of people kind of want to see kind of like how this whole kind of evolution kind of takes place and everything like that. And obviously, you know, you started out, you know, at more developmental levels, Omar. So I don't know if you can share some sessions kind of like from the developmental level, and we can kind of break down like how this changes now once you get into a first team environment.
Sure. Let me see if I can. Can I share my screen? Yeah. Okay. Before I play this, I also want to share something that, you know, Todd shared with me back in the day. And when we were talking about his session, people were watching it and stuff. I'm like, oh, this is professional training. And he would tell me, I remember he told me, he was like, a young parent came to me and said, I want my son and daughter to get pro level coaching. And he was like, I don't, there's no real difference. Obviously, the service is a little bit different. There's obviously a little bit more attention to detail with the technique, but the sessions will more or less look the same because the game is more or less the same. Different challenges in different age groups, right? But more or less, it looks the same. But now it's the coaching points and the expectation of what I expect from each goalkeeper based on the levels. So for me, I took that to heart. So if you look at my sessions, I'll show you from college to LAFC, then now to Angel City, a lot of them look very, very similar. But you'll see, I would say the difference is that the goalkeepers are probably, the expectation for me is that at the first team level, all three goalkeepers have to have clean technique, no issues. LAFC, we have a guy who's, you know, signed to the second team, but then we also have an academy player that comes up. So the expectation for the academy player is to be sound, but I also have a little bit of lenience towards that. Then here at Cal State LA, we had five goalkeepers at one time. And the starter is the starter. He's the guy. Second goalkeeper, you can kind of go from second to four, second to five, between those and decide which one you think is the number two. But the number one is my expectation is he has to be quality every single session. The other goalkeepers I have more leniency to. So the sessions look the same, but I have more expectations or less expectations based on the position.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
you can see.
Like, yeah, we're seeing right here. So this is Cal State LA?
This is Cal State LA. This is the starter.
Okay.
So for me, it was just making sure, like, this is one of the number twos, but similar. You can see, again, maybe I edit them so clean, so everything looks clean. But there are moments where, you know, they're taking the ball wrong or they have their own technique. This goalkeeper that we have, Alex Brems, he's from Denmark. So if you ever seen the Danish catch, he catches the ball like windshield wipers with his elbows. So like it's the weirdest thing, but I have to coach him now in a different way because it's worked for him all those years. So me being at Cal State LA was the first time I've been with a ton of goalkeepers from different countries where now I'm seeing a different way to execute the goalkeeping position. And that was a step for me to figure out how do I communicate, hey, do it your way, but also like how is my ego as a coach not, or like my presence as a coach not diminish?
And I know I'm jumping forward, but now you have to deal with that with Angel City.
For sure. I mean,
100%. Okay. We'll get there.
I'll move this. Oh, okay. Sorry.
What happened to your premiere? Your premiere?
Look at the advertisements. I love it.
Okay, Omar. Now you really are a first team coach. You don't understand technology. You don't know how YouTube works.
This is my channel, so I have ads running. So this is me. But again, a lot of these sessions, very, very, they'll look very similar. So for here, it was like, okay, make a save and then on the big goal from the angle. And then from this area here, you're shifting after the angle shot to a smaller goal within the goal. And then you're trying to make a save, whether a foot save or a 1v1 save. But nothing for me in terms of how these sessions are run changes.
By the way, my favorite thing about this is that on the right-hand side, we see all the videos that Omar's been watching on his YouTube or suggested for him. And we've got someone who's a very cultured human being, and they're not just willing to look at one point of view because they've got Joe Rogan and John Oliver at the exact same time.
It says Kevin James lost 60 pounds fasting, so I was always interested in that. But okay, let me go to now. This is my it's a different one.
Oh my gosh!
Okay, amazing. So now this is you can see this LAFC. Again, now it's my session with the goalkeepers. I like to do things off to the side a lot because I think in the goal, it's for like, you know, special things. This is for my activations. I always like to use the poles just because it helps with angles. It helps with, I don't know, for me, like save percentage as well to start off the sessions in a good way. But then once you've identified that your diving range within the poles, once we get to the goal, now I'm asking you for a bigger diving range. And I hope that by covering these, it'll translate that. But okay, I have here, again, you'll see, very, very similar. My activations are volley. I like to get some in possession, out of possession stuff. And then here, good.
We're not seeing it.
Sorry. There we go. No? Better?
Yeah.
Now we're seeing. Okay. I want to talk about this, you know, Omar, because in regards to like a lot of people out there who are watching right now, I think like if you want to coach at a professional first team environment, a lot of people just come from the youth environment and they try to go to the professional environment, but like having that capability of working either at a high school or a college for something that's a little bit more results oriented is really going to help prepare you for that type of competition, right?
For sure. I mean, again, like I said, there's different needs at different age groups, right? Like if I'm at the college level, my responsibility was to take care, as Chris Chamonix, the head coach, would say, is like, you can have fun in the offseason, Omar, in spring. Do all the things you want to do in spring, but I need our starting goalkeeper to be ready for 19, 20 games. That's all I need. I don't want him to be learning anything new. I want him to be sound and ready. So again, for me at that level, the expectation is that I'm mindful of the number one, the number two, three, four, five. I'll take care of them, but number one is a priority. And then now when you get to the pro level, I mean, last season I watched it with Oka. It's like you have three goalkeepers that are all depending on you for their continued growth and their continued development. So you have to put three different plans, or like in every session, coach things that are in their IDPs, or coach things that are, you know, things they need to work on. So that's how I would say. And here as well, it's like the starter would be with the first team, the third goalkeeper, Abraham Romero. And Joss, I had some goalkeepers from UCLA, Sam Joseph, Giancarlo was at Oregon State. These guys, I mean, they have their college environments, but when they come to me, my job isn't to, you know, completely tear their game down. It's to find ways to optimize things that are working for them. And so for me, it's like more development based, where like once they leave me, hopefully we've identified and worked on certain things. But then when I get the starter, it's more of like a warm-up progression for me. When I get the actual like starters in Angel City, I'm working with three potential starters every single day. And that's something that like your expectation of like how much attention you put to one goalkeeper in your previous environments, now you have to put it into all three. And that in itself is like, now I'm prepared for it. Now I feel like I've created a process of how to do one at a time. Now I can take all that and multiply it by three.
See, I love Suski. You know, one of the things that are said right there, and I think, you know, we talked about it with Sergio Gonzalez, you know, from Racing Louisville, is that you've got to make sure that you personalize those IDPs even at the first team level, in order to, because everyone's in a different stage of development. Like, yes, there's certain expectations at the first team level, but when you have a three who might just have just come out of college, like, there's still some growth there. And like, obviously, you know, you're going to want them to put in time on their own, but it is also your job to help guide them.
For sure. For sure. And I think that's, yeah.
That was a question.
That was a question for Saskia, wasn't it?
It was a little rhetorical. Oh, okay. No, yes. And like, and again, like Omar said, right now at Angel City, he has three goalkeepers that are, want to start and are potential starters, you know, and so you're kind of changing that mentality. Now, once you get into season, right, you've had preseason since the end of January, right? So once you've gone through, get into season, that might change a little bit. And I'm, you know, like now you're prepping, whether if it's Harjic, if it's Anderson, whatever, you're prepping them for that next game that week. At the same time.
Sure.
At the same time, making sure your other two goalkeepers are ready at any second. But now that changes, your periodization changes to, you know, make sure, you know, they're ready for the next game. But now in preseason and stuff like that, they're battling. Everybody knows that, you know, they're battling for a starting spot. You might have a young keeper that comes in that, you know, is probably the number three, and that, you know, you've identified that, and maybe a fourth that's like your academy player or something, but it's totally different. And you know, you can't just automatically go in, for coaches out there, with to say, this is my starter, these are my backups, I'm only going to focus on them, you know, because it might be different for where you're at and the level you're at.
For sure.
And I think 100%. I think Omar, just one thing real quick.
Yeah, you guys we're at Pepperdine right now. You're not at whatchamacallit.
No, we switched. We're back at.
Are you back? You're back in.
Yeah, we're back in. Yeah, but I'm just hold on. Let me just pull this up.
Talk about a view from a field, though.
My God, that's amazing.
It's ridiculous.
People are looking at that in like Kansas right now, and they're like, "What are you guys complaining about?"
I mean, look, when we would go play there at UCLA, like we were like taking photos, like we had never been to the beach before. Like I'm like, this is sick. Of course, it's like 10 minutes from me, but I'm like, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, and even like, I mean, we were at Pepperdine. There was. Like some sessions that I started, I wanted to do like angle recovery movements and, you know, get shots from the angle. And I did one exercise that looked really good on paper. And these, you know, the goalkeepers, they know that. They'll hear from me all the time. I'm like, it looked really good on paper, but when I executed it, it was a shit show. And I, you know, I try to be as forthcoming with them as possible. I'm like, not even apologizing, but like, hey, it needs to be better. And there's, you know, again, at this level, I'm still making mistakes that I want to own up to, obviously, but I'm also like, you know, there's no perfect session. There is, you know, good planning, but even when I plan, sometimes the sessions don't go as planned.
Yeah.
And I think that is for any young coach out there, like, once you get to this level, have it as figured out as you possibly can. And at every level, I'm not saying that when you're in college that you need to, you know, say, hey, I'm not at the pro level yet, so like this session can be shit. But I think that there's opportunities where you can hold yourself to that standard and be that voice who's going to hold you accountable. And you miss a volley. And I've done that since I was young too. Not young, but like last year, 2 years ago in my career, where I miss a volley and I'm like, the next one has to be quality. And it's like, no one's really caring if it's quality or not. Obviously the goalkeepers do. But like, I know for a fact, and I tell myself all the time, like, I know for a fact I'm going to be in situations in the future, in a first team environment, this was before Angel City, that I'm going to miss a ball. And I need to know how to recover from that situation. I need to know that I've done multiple repetitions of being able to have composure in the next rep so that it doesn't influence the next 4 or 5 reps. And like,
it's funny, Omar, is people are listening to this going like, wait a minute, you're the coach. You know what I mean? The way you sound, this is just me saying, the way you sound right now is like a player. Like, oh
yeah,
my God,
I was literally thinking the same thing.
Or, oh my God, I didn't hold on to that, you know, to that dive or that cross that came in or something. But this is the care that goes into being a coach and to being an elite coach and to getting to be one of the best is that's how much you care. You're like mentally having to do your own work. Like we could call Dan Abrahams for you if you need, because you missed a volley in a warm up for a goalkeeper in a training session. And that to me just shows just a level of passion and care. That's why where you're at. Cause I'm the same way. Like I used to, when I was warming up like pre-games for, or even in practices for UCLA and my like half volley's off or something's off. Like I would have to compose myself as a goalkeeper because I'm getting frustrated because I need this to be on point as if I was playing the game. Like I need to bring, my level has to be the highest it can possibly be to train my goalkeepers. And so I get you with that.
Well, there was. Go ahead, Omar.
I'll make it quick. There was a moment in preseason where we were in Florida, and we had 4 goalkeepers at the time. I needed to get there early to work with one goalkeeper, and then after that, we had 3 goalkeepers working in towards the game. So we had our starter for that game was Didi, and then Hannah Stambach played the second game. Well, then Hannah played the second half, and then Ange played the last. And it was in the warm-up where, you know, you finish the warm-up, everybody gets their drinks, everyone's chilling for a little bit, and then some goalkeepers like volleys again, some goalkeepers don't. I guess I already said Didi, but Didi, you know, I hit like one volley that was terrible. Like I was – but it was fatigue because we were in Orlando all week, or I was just not on it mentally. I don't know what happened. I missed one. And I was like, okay, get your shit together. Come on. I missed another one. And then she was just like, oh, not you in your head. No. She said, don't tell me you're in your own head. You're in your own head too, Omar. But like in a laughing way. And again, you have like personalities like Ange and Didi are similar in the way that they're like, they're gamers. Like you know that when you're looking at them, they are coming to win you a game. And then I had that same feeling with John McCarthy and Maxime Crepeau. It's like you miss a ball, but like you don't want to disappoint them because like their attention to winning, their attention to executing at the highest level is so like core and foundational to what the game should extract from you that as a coach, you don't want to impede that. You don't want to hinder that. So for me, it's like you want to help that. And that moment where I was like, oh God, my worst nightmare of missing 2 volleys in the warm-up to Didi now is like, her saying that, I laughed it off, but I was like, damn, I got to step it up. So it's just, again, those moments where like, if all is going well, even if it's not like a moment to learn, keep yourself at the highest standard. It's going great. Okay. Hit 20 out of 20, hit 25 out of 25, 30 out of 30. You miss one. Okay. Can't miss 2. And I think those are the moments where like, when the lights aren't on you as a young coach that you have to be, as Mike said, your own critic, the person who's correcting you every single time. And you have to have that bad side, that angel on one side, devil on the other. That devil needs to be the loudest sometimes to get you to understand, hey, that's not good enough and no one's watching, but I'm watching on here. And if it's not good enough for us, it won't be good enough for somebody else.
You know, I want to bring that up, you know, Omar, in regards to like, and Susk, you know, feel free to add in as well.
I'm writing notes. Like,
yeah, Susk is just like
I've been prepping all week because we just got this game last minute. So like, and you know, the final rosters just came out yesterday. So I just been prepping all week, and I'm like, ooh, I gotta get my like quotes down from Omar for the call on Sunday. Go ahead.
I want to say is like, I think, you know, one of the things is too, is that one of the challenges about being in a first team environment and is that you're now working with people who are closer to your age, who have similar experiences to you. When you're working in a developmental environment, even if you're working in a professional developmental environment, you know, 23, 22, 21, very different than working with a 28, 29, 30 year old who's like, you know, right around your age and might have had around the same level of experience, you know, life-wise as you. So Omar, does that get in your head when you're like working with somebody? You're like, oh my gosh, like I'm not talking to a child anymore. I'm talking to somebody, I'm working with an adult. And because of that, like I have to change my coaching behaviors as if I'm working with an adult, you know? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I wouldn't say that I changed too much, to be honest with you. There is, again, when you have such high expectations and you have the goalkeepers that we have who, I mean, have been starters. And for me, it's just making sure that every single day that I speak to them in a way that like I'm trying to progress and help them get better. And I think that was, I mean, in all of our interviews that we've done, it's like the way you present it to the goalkeepers is like they just want to know that you are there to help them get better. So for me, I don't change too much. I don't try to, you know, say things that are going to make me sound smarter or whatever. It's more of like, you're obsessed with goalkeeping. You're in a first team environment. I'm obsessed with goalkeeping. I'm a goalkeeper coach. I live this. So let's just have like a goalkeeping conversation. Let's just nerd out and geek out on goalkeeping. And I think that obviously there's certain things that like you have to tailor towards each goalkeeper and how you communicate with them. But being in this environment now, there are certain things that I try to converse with them on a one-on-one level versus like calling them out in the group. And I think that in itself is like, hey, in this moment, I said something to you, you didn't respond well to it. How can we get better at that? And I think that is how I've geared it now to having more conversations off to the side in one-on-one scenarios versus like in a group. Because for me, I still don't know them. So I know them well, but on a personal level, I think throughout the duration of the season, I'll get to know them more and I'll kind of know what triggers they have and like what's going to make them tick a little bit more. But right now, I think within the group, good environment, everybody comes to work, wants to work, and hopefully enjoys the sessions. But then obviously we have the videos and stuff that we watch afterwards. So I think all in all, I save a lot of the communication sparingly where yeah. if I don't have anything to say to you then, because I just don't want to expose or exploit or say anything that like too negative. When we watch video, when the, I guess, tempers and when the emotion is lower, then we can have a conversation without any emotion fogging our, I guess, coachability or even myself. Right. If I feel like in the moment it's a little bit too high intense, I'm going to wait for a conversation off to the side. And I think when I have a conversation off to the side, it's like cool heads are more composed. And we have opportunities to say what we actually mean versus taking things out of context if you are saying something negative in front of the group or, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's adult conversations. It's the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're at a level, but, you know, I don't disagree that this can be handled at any level. But, and it's the type of coach you are or whoever out there chooses to be. But number one, your goalkeeper knows if they're making a mistake, right? So there's no reason to dress them at this level. There's no reason to dress them down in front of the team, in front of other coaches, in front of players, period, right? So see if they can fix the mistake they're making. See if they can make the in the flow of the training session, stuff like that. Yeah. And once their frustration lags and once that drops, you walk with them, you have a conversation. Okay, what's going on? Like, why do you keep like letting that ball up near post? I think your positioning's off or whatever, you know, like whatever the conversation may be. But these are adults. You're an adult, and that gives, you give respect, you get respect. And I don't think at that level, you know, you're yelling, in my opinion, doesn't go anywhere. Dressing somebody down and embarrassing doesn't go anywhere. You know, constructive criticism and treating them like the adults that they are and the professionals that they are, you're going to get your best results, period.
Yeah. And I've noticed too, there have been moments where the activation part, where we're missing passes, or, you know, handling isn't as clean as it needs to be, the service isn't as clean as it needs to be. I don't like to say too much, because like you're saying, you don't want to, like, they know they're doing something wrong. And exactly. I think at that level, there's a certain level of like mutual respect, that, hey, I'm not going to call you out, and vice versa. There's an expectation that we're coming to work and we're going to be as best, the best that we can. And I understand.
Look, you can say like, if the group is, if something's going on, you go, okay, guys, let's step it up a level. Like it can
no,
be,
for
a
sure.
comment, it could be a comment like that. But again, like I said, they know when they're making a mistake. Like we've given them those tools through their careers, through their lives, you know, see if they can figure it out.
Yeah. And I'm more on the side of like, I want to give you the opportunity to prove me wrong versus me trying to influence and pat myself on the back by saying I influenced your improvement in this session by yelling at you. I don't believe in that. So I think there have been moments in sessions where the activation's not great. And then those goalkeepers who aren't doing well in the activation, we step into the, you know, to a bigger exercise of the day, and they kill it. They knock it out. And I like look at them and I'm like, good response. Great response. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. And I think that for me is my coaching style, but it's so hard because when you, in this world, the people that make the most noise get the most attention. And those are the ones that are doing keynote talks, going to convention and, you know, speaking in front of all these people who have this certain personality. And I think you, as a young coach, see that and you say, look at all the attention they're getting, look at all the roles that they've had. And you want to adopt that cadence or that candor and that the way that they speak. But in reality, like it's something that you can try to apply, but if it's not your personality, it's not going to work. And I've tried my best to separate what I have deemed as exciting and I really want to be that to what fits my personality more. And I've had issues at Cal State LA, the goalkeeper that I had, he was like, Omar, coach, it's okay if you yell at me every now and again.
Yeah,
like,
some players respond to it. But again, that you have to judge that situation. Like if it's not who you are as a personality, as a coach, you know, I'm sorry if your response is me pulling out the bullwhip and hitting you on the back every time to get you to do something. Like, that's not who I am as a coach. Like, we've got to figure out a different way. And it also takes away from other goalkeepers' mentalities. If three of your other goalkeepers don't respond that way and you're sitting there yelling just to appease one goalkeeper and it's not who you are, then it's not authentic.
I want to bring this up really quickly because Austin, Austin, please tell us where in the world you're watching the show from. A lot of really great questions and comments that you've got going on right here. He made a point earlier, and I want to really make sure that any young coaches out there are listening. He said, oh, geez, Omar's developmental content is all college and the professional academy level. And I'm like, I want you to understand that that's not where Omar started. Omar started at the grassroots level, just like we all start at the grassroots level. And that, so there, but there's stages of development. There's stages
and
of developmental.
But I think what Omar made clear in that was that the sessions themselves might not look that different, but your expectations and what you're doing with that level of goalkeeper change. So, you know, if you're working with little 9-year-olds and stuff like that, and you kind of have a similar setup to what you were doing with pros, what are your expectations out of the set from this level of goalkeeping? And I think that you made that pretty clear. Like, that's what you were saying in the beginning. Like, my sessions are going to look similar, but the expectations and what I need from these goalkeepers are going to be different.
And I think that's one. Go ahead, Omar.
No. I mean, it's exactly that. I mean, like, obviously for me, when you look at content creation, you want to put the best out there in terms of like, you want to train with the best so that the content looks great. So I think that I could, I'll not take fault with that, but I think that's also something that like I slipped into as a young content creator of like, I want to be with the best players to showcase that I am a coach that can coach at that level. This is my virtual resume. And I think that it's worked for me in many ways at LAFC. When I first got there, they were like, yeah, we watched some of your content on YouTube. I don't know if they did. I hope they did. But they've seen some of my stuff coaching players who are at that caliber. And they know that hopefully Omar can hold his own. And this is a candidate that we will bring in for a trial. But we've seen through his virtual resume that he can coach players at this level. And I think that for me is something that I always try to let coaches know is like, yeah, have the academy side and like work with that. But at the same time too, like coaches around the country, like they'll ask me, hey, do you know anybody for this role and that role? And I have like four or five people that I always, always recommend. Because I know that I've seen them coach live in person at camps and stuff. And I know that they can hold their own in those environments. And I've seen their social media stuff. So I think it's a balance of both from the business side. Let the parents know you can take care of academy young goalkeepers. But at the same time, too, for yourself, that you can strike a ball at a certain level. You can be consistent with your service. Your session design isn't, you know, so far-fetched. It's very modernized. And it's like it's the way the game plays. So like showcasing that, I think both worlds is very valuable.
You know, I want to bring up something really quickly, and Saskia, please add on to this because, you know, you've been in that environment, you know, more so than myself. I want a lot of coaches out there, you know, younger coaches out there who might be entering a first team environment, like whether it's a college level or a professional level or anything like that. Don't try to be something you're not. Don't try to prove to the players that you can strike the ball at this level or you can, you know, a coach at this level or whatever. Just be you and let the work speak for itself, right?
Exactly. Well,
yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to grow as a coach as well. And everything's going to get better and better as well. But don't try to set up a drill that you don't know the why of, number one. Like we've always talked about that. Don't say do it just because you saw it on some internet or something like that. Like do it because you understand the why and there's a philosophy behind it and it's your philosophy and you need to, you know, grow your goalkeepers using this particular drill. And if you're just cutting and pasting in a sense, then like I say, you're not coaching, you're a trainer.
Well, but I also think it's just in regards to like the imposter syndrome aspect, Omar, is like, you know, there are like you get to that level and you're like, oh, I have to coach like a professional goalkeeper coach as opposed to
coach like yourself. Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can see here, this is me at a local high school next to me where I usually have to jump over the fence to open the gate. You can see in that far corner, but this is a session, somebody that I met through social media and then he wanted to have a session and just going over the basics. This is all stuff that like for me, like I still post and I still want people to see, but it's all like, I don't know. This is all a part of my journey. So yeah, I want to show more grassroots stuff, but these are just conversations that I have with these goalkeepers. Like, what do you want to work on? Okay. I want to work on my mid dives. I want to work on making sure I don't fall backwards. So then I take what they tell me and then I take what I see and I try to manage and prepare them for both and try to improve them in that way. But this is from, I don't know how long ago, but from 6 years ago.
Six years ago. My gosh, man.
That's crazy.
The goalkeeper coach in the world.
This guy's probably like 30 years old by now. I don't know. It's been so long. This is all like, look, this is like for me when I was growing up, like my uncle taught
me
a lot of stuff.
That's actually Drake Callender. He's now on the men's national team.
But it's just stuff that I learned, you know, for low dives, getting the head underneath a rope, you know, making sure your body falls forward. These are all things that I learned. And these are all things that as a young coach, I tried to implement them in my sessions. And I wish I would have seen these kids more often. I mean, I didn't have the business savvy to like put a session or like a group session every single night or things like that. This is me just getting in this guy's face for interview. But this is my next session. Again, I was coaching variability of ages and abilities.
That guy's like 52 years old. My gosh.
No, he was only like
a grown adult.
He was only like 16, dude.
Nothing is wrong with that, Suska. I'm just saying it's like a very showing the contrast of like that was a child, and then all of a sudden you have literally a man with like a family and a mortgage.
That's what 16 looks like nowadays.
Oh my gosh. It's,
but yeah, this is Austin, I hear you. And I think that you make a good point. But I think, yeah, you forget I don't know, for me, I'll stop sharing, but you forget that dude is not 16. but like, hold on. I have one that I will never accept because I was wearing glasses. Like, I don't know what I was thinking as a coach and like just trying to be cool, or I don't know what it is. Let me find it right now. But it was this young girl named Daisy. She was 9 years old. No, maybe like 11. And I trained her and we were literally going over the basics of goalkeeping. And it was one where like, that's what my sessions looked like. I had young kids who had zero experience, who just loved playing. And then I had goalkeepers from USL, MLS, who wanted to come train with me in the off season. And we would go to Orange County, Great Park in Irvine, and we would train. And I was able to test myself on both ways. And obviously, look, when you're a young coach, like, you need to make money. Like, there's no easy way to say it. Like, you have to make money in a way. And like, I wasn't working anywhere else, so this was my business. So like, you're taking different clients any way that you can, but like, you start to recognize that you can't run the exact same session with the young kids as you do with the older ones. And if I do, I may not get to progression 5. I may have to be at 1 and 2 right, the entire right. session. And that's how it's going to be. But I, at right, the same it's time, not, it's just like going over the basics. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not. And I think that's a good point, Omar. We've talked about that, is you can't skip over things because you said, okay, this is the session I'm supposed to run. I'm supposed to get from point A to point D through in the next hour. You have to, and this is Austin to answer another question, you have to say, look, I've got a bunch of 9 year olds here. I'm going to be stuck at A and B today. You know, I'm not going to get to the fruition of this, and I'm not going to force myself to get through this if that's not where their progression is going either. You have to recognize that. And we talked about that. You know, you have an idea in your head of what this session is going to be like, but you might not get there.
But yeah, just look at this. Look at what a joke I look like. I'm wearing a puffer jacket, basketball. I'm wearing basketball shorts. Oh, so these are the humble. God. I'm telling you, these are like the humble beginnings, man. Like, this is a high school that's right next to me that I had. Like, this ground, or like this grass, used to be on top of a parking lot. This car used to park here. So I remember I would do demos and I would literally get up and go, I'm never doing that again. Like, I hope they figured it out on this rep, because I there's no way I'm going down there again, because my hips would be so sore. Like, I could feel the cement, and I'm like, damn, these kids have to dive on this. Like, I feel terrible. But it was, yeah, these are like the moments where like, you really iron out, like, what do I believe in as a coach? And like, if I see it, like, you know, low dives, like how I'm teaching her. Like, here, right? So like, you know, I teach this to young goalkeepers. Like, we had some goalkeepers this preseason and even last season where, like, you know, Abraham Romero, I'm doing this same exercise with him where I'm like, I need you to get lower faster. And this is the exercise I learned in Mexico. You put the ball next to you, you go low and you push. And these are things that like, I'm expecting Abraham to do after like, you know, one day of working on it with her. She has to, you know, Daisy, she has to do it over and over and over,
over
again.
And over again. For,
yeah. So I'm teaching her the easy, the basics here. So it's like, again, I definitely have seen every age group, but I think it's also super important that like, you challenge yourself when you want to get to that next level of like, I want to coach pros, and I think I can make a career out of that. Like, I want to surround myself around MLS, USL. My buddy Armando Quesada, who I started my channel with, like, he was with me, and I remember doing sessions with him, and he looked at me and said, "Dude, I'm done. Like, I travel, you know, 40 miles to come train with you." And we're doing sessions where I promise you will never do these sessions again once you've like stopped recording. And I'm like, he's like, you need to understand people are watching your channel and they need to learn things. I'm like, you also need to be mindful of how you're presenting yourself to coaches. Like, you think they're actually going to hire you of doing these exercises? No way. And it was like that, again, constructive criticism where I drove home like pissed. And I'm like, this guy's an asshole. Like, what is he talking about? And I remember I've had conversations with Mike before too, where he's like, watch my session. He's like, hey, I think you're focusing. Mike, I remember everything. He's like, Omar, I think you're focusing too much on your progressions. Like, it's all about progressions for you. Like, just so it, like, not that you said it looks good on camera, but that's how I felt. We were talking. It's like, not everything's for the camera. You need to actually put a session together that's going to help this player get better. And it's like those moments where I'm hearing these things and I'm like, he's right. Like, I hate that he's saying it, because it's not an idea that came from me, but he's saying it and it's right. And I think that was where all the little things that I've learned over the years of like having thick skin and it sucks for the day, but after the day, be, you know, grow some and wake up the next morning and say, okay, they were right. what were they right about? Take the little bits and pieces, filter what you liked, what you didn't like, and then from there, apply it. And then once you've applied it, now it's becoming a part of you. And I think that like you have enough times where people pour into you and their ideas become a part of you. And I don't know, I'm just really happy that like I've been able to hopefully carry on a lot of the lessons that, you know, coaches and people that have poured into me.
But you know, I just kind of just as we start like wrapping all that stuff up, you know, Omar, and I know that you've got a lot going on right now. So, you know, I mean, you know, you haven't even had time to set up your full on, you know, Joe Rogan style professional podcast studio in your place because you've been so busy with the first team at Angel City. But like, I think a lot of people out there like have to understand that like you'd rather get this feedback and information at the beginning of your journey as opposed to getting to that first team environment and finding out that the starting goalkeeper spoke to the general manager and said, this person's not cutting it, not at the level. And then you're out of a job and then you're trying to find another job and you're not able to find a job because like, and you don't know why, yeah. Because no one's willing to give you that feedback because you're now in a competitive environment where they're not willing to be open and honest with you. So it's like, yeah. Why don't you get that at the grassroots level? And then once you've learned those mistakes, then you can try to pursue the professional level.
Yeah, I think, look, coach, my coaching journey, I can compare it a lot to like what parenting would be. I think that growing up now, like I wish I spoke better Spanish. I wish I spoke better Arabic. And like, I can sit there and blame my parents and say, hey, you should have done this. You should have done that. But like, look at the other great things they've done for me, create a foundation for my life and like everything in terms of community. They've done so many good things for me. And it's like, you get to a point in your coaching career where, yeah, you're upset at your parents or you're upset at your mentors. And then a year passes and you're like, I'm so thankful for them. They're amazing. And it's like exactly how parenting is. Like you hate your parents because of all the lessons and things that they do, grounding you over the years. And like you failed the class and they set a standard and they said, Omar, you're not going out with your friends. You failed this class. Oh, sorry. You're staying in your room. That's it. But then you grow up and you're like, I'm so happy that they stopped my the low standard that I had for myself and what I thought I was capable for. They stopped it in its tracks. And then I was able to actually get better at that thing. And I think that all the coaches that I've had have found things about me and the inefficiencies of my work and said, this is not going to cut it. This is not going to cut it. You told me you were going to be here at this capacity, at this rate, but you're not here at that capacity, at that rate. I could fire you, but I'm letting you know this is your last warning. And I've gotten so many of those that now when I present myself on the field, there are voices that carry from years and years that stay with me. And I'm like, okay, this guy will be pissed. This guy will be pissed. I didn't work all this time for my mom and my dad to look at me and say, you know, you wasted an opportunity. What did we teach you? So like all the things that I take from my coaches and people that are mentors to me is like my parents that I've had for 3-4 years at a time. And I think that is what's kept me, at a high standard and keeping my work clean. There are moments where I could be better, 110%. There are still moments that I haven't figured it all out. And you can take this sauce and like run with it, but like everywhere I've gone, I've had people who are incredibly smart, but their work ethic and their standard, they won't take any BS. And they asked me on the Spanish interview this morning, they were like, you know, what is it that's going to take this team in their third season to a championship? And for me, it's the staff. Becky is unbelievable. She is, when she speaks with so much, she's so articulate. She speaks with so much like, this is the standard and that's it. The vibe that I get is like, she's not here to make friends. She's here to win. And I remember in preseason, it was like, nice people don't win anything. Like we need to come into these games and we need to dominate from the beginning and we need to be that team that people are afraid to play. That's what I got. She didn't say those words, but that's what I got out of it. But Becky, then you have Ellery E, the assistant coach, getting her PhD, incredibly smart. I asked her so many questions and the way she responds to me, I know so much more about the game that I'm just like, I should have asked this years ago. And then you have Lee Nguyen. Lee, I mean, playing in the MLS for so many years, Vietnamese national team, not national team, sorry, and playing in Vietnam, playing for the U.S. national team. He is so incredibly smart, speaks with so much conviction. You watch him give presentations and you're like, I didn't believe what he was saying before that that's how we should play. But when he stopped talking, I'm like, I'm bought in 110%. He can convince me to do anything. And then for me, you have Mikel, who was at LAFC with me when he was in the academy. I was the second team. I didn't get to know him that well, but we got to know each other now with Angel City. Like from a he has his A license. He, when he speaks to the group and when he speaks to the players in individual sessions, I watch him and I'm like, those are the relationships that I'm trying to foster. You know, he has that like capacity to get into the weeds of what a friendship and coach relationship looks like, and making sure that he creates that experience where the player feels like they have a friend on staff. And then obviously Oliver, he's our wizard on the huddle cameras and all that stuff. Amazing. I'll talk about him later, but he's quality too, 23 years old coming into an environment. But those four guys, like for me, I'll be honest with you, like it's just continuing the level of quality people that are mentors to me in my career that is just a launching point to wherever I go next. I mean, hopefully I stay here for years and years and years, but like, I know that I'm getting so much better day in and day out because these people are incredibly intelligent, but they're so like kind with their time. Like they will sit with you and really help you understand, or like I do set pieces. So they'll watch the set pieces that I do or like my scouting reports, and they'll say, hey, this could be better, that could be better. And like starting from the top with Becky, who sets the standard so high, it's that English mentality, I would say, but she sets a standard so high, not just with the players, but with the staff, that like, I feel welcomed, but at the same time, I'm in a pro environment. And when you step in those doors with someone like that, you want to do whatever you possibly can to win for that person. And yeah, Becky's quality. She's top, man. She's great.
I mean, I honestly feel like Omar, like, you know, you're in such a great position because you're continuing your education. It's not like it's ended. And I want a lot of people out there, you know, to hear that you're just because you get it to that first team level doesn't mean that your education ends. It continues on. You know, kind of as we start wrapping this up, and I know we've been going long, but it's kind of been like a reunion show, like a Friends reunion show or Will and Grace reunion show, something like that. I kind of want to ask this, you know, Saskia, from a player's standpoint, you know, if somebody wants to coach at the professional level, like what does a player expect from you?
Wow. I think, Omar.
Yeah,
no, I expect Omar. I expect a certain level of professionalism. You know, I would expect a certain level of respect, given, you know, to receive it as well. I keep going back to this analogy. I don't want a trainer. I still want a coach. This is me personally. I still want a coach. I still want somebody teaching me. And I do agree with, there comes a point that I'm just prepping for games and stuff like that. But within that, there's still teaching moments and teaching ability, whether it's coming off of mistakes made in the last game or anything, those conversation and everything. And I want them to elevate. I would want a coach to elevate my strengths and help me see how my strengths can just like be utilized in the game more, in practice more and everything. And then like work on my weaknesses. I mean, I guess that's what you're asking. Yeah.
No. I mean, the thing is, the reason I was asking you is because, you know, as somebody who's played at the highest level, like, you know, you're going to have a different perspective than me conceptually or Omar conceptually, because, you know, you've been through that journey, you've been through that process.
But when I played pro in Japan, I didn't really have a goalkeeper coach. I was my own goalkeeper coach. When I played pro, when we had the WSA, yes, I had a goalkeeper coach, and no knock on anybody. Yes, good goalkeeper coaches, but I couldn't sit back and say, did I think I was, they were more trainers for me? Yeah, people can get mad at DM me. It's fine. Yes, I do. I don't think it was the development that I had with like, in college or with the national team and stuff like that. So I think it was more putting sessions together and just going through the motions. Mm-hmm. Not me going through the motions, but you know, so I still want to be taught. I still want to learn while I'm a pro.
Omar, I know you need to get a haircut, but I just really quickly, I want to just bring up this last point here, because I think it's really important, is that you also need to understand the expectations of the club for you coming into that environment. Like, you need to have that conversation and know, like, what do they want out of you? Like, do they want you just to be working with goalkeepers? Do they want you to understand this, you know, to be working with the team as well, like on set pieces? And you know, that's one thing that, you know, you've said, is that like kind of the evolution of the goalkeeper coach at the professional level is that they are expected to not only work with the goalkeepers, but also work with the entire team as a whole on set pieces and that sort of thing?
Yeah, it was a newer experience for me in the sense of the set pieces, because when I was doing the defensive work with LAFC2, because the first team had so many games over the last two seasons, a lot of those players weren't with us prior to the match. We would see them only on game day. So we would have maybe five of the 11 starters. So we weren't really doing the defensive work and like ironing out all the details and coaching on the fly and having answers in the moment. It was more so we watched film and the kid, right. You know, the players came in, we had conversations with them, but I didn't really need to project and articulate my voice in a big group. I was always obviously with the goalkeepers, and you have conversations with them and you have a relationship with them and everyone that, you know, you spend so much time with them. But when you're with a first team like this and you have World Cup winners, gold medalists, you have people in the room who they just want, I mean, from my experience, like they want to be told where to be, how to do it, what to do. And as a set piece guy, like at the beginning, I didn't have those reps of having answers right off the bat or being able to be composed when someone is challenging me. I didn't have those things. So again, going back to those first few weeks, I had more anxiety doing set pieces than I did goalkeeper coaching. Because it was such a new environment for me. Goalkeeping is what I do every day. And like, there's going to be challenges. I've faced a few in my day with goalkeepers on a one-on-one level and the group level. But then when you have like a bigger group level, people who don't speak my language of goalkeeping, it could be difficult because I don't really have what common denominator do we have other than we're both a part of the organization. So it's taken so much time, and it's given me insight into, again, what an amazing staff, people who get behind someone who, I mean, they could see me and they'll say, yeah, he doesn't have the confidence at the beginning, but like they have continued to pour into me. And now I have so much more confidence to say what I need to say, explain what I need to explain, and have everyone's attention. And I've gotten that confidence from the captains who have come to me and said, hey, we're behind you, we support you. And from the staff who come up to me and give me little fist bumps and say, Omar, you did a great job today. So it's like those things for me where I'm just like the expectation is that you come in and you teach. But then sometimes because the expectation was a little bit different at LAFC too, it's taken a little bit of time for me to find my space there. But now it's you know, almost 2 months in, and with the staff, with the players showing me support and all that, I feel so much more comfortable and so much more at ease in the environment. But again, those standards need to be maintained and stay high, and that no issue. But over time, I'm just excited to see where the group grows and how the season goes. And like I said, Becky and staff, top notch organizationally, Ange, Julie, everyone there, quality. So, I mean, when you have, I mean, I felt it before at LAFC. John Thornton ran the ship, Steve Cherundolo, Enrique, all the guys that we had. Top notch, high standard, and it yields results. So I'm excited to see being a part of that first team environment and that project here with Angel City, how far we can go.
I mean, what a great way to wrap up this podcast, honestly. You know, I'm so excited for the home opener this weekend. I mean, this feels like an Angel City podcast. this is good. No, man, I mean, we're so excited for everything you got going on. You know, obviously we don't need to plug where you can reach out to Omar. I think everybody out there knows how you can connect with him. But I do want to say, I know a lot of you people have been reaching out and saying, hey, I've been wanting to do mentor sessions with Omar. He's been a little bit busy, guys. So if you're on the app, go to theuniongk.com. That landing page shares all the information in regards to the mentor program. And hopefully Omar will open up some office hours soon to work with some people, depending on how comfortable he gets with the environment. Obviously you can, schedule sessions with myself or Saskia or any of the other great mentors on the platform, uniongk.com for all that information, contact at insidethe18media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast. If you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, reach us on the Union app right over there. You can reach out to Saskia over there at Saskia, myself at Goalkeeper Podcast. All right, guys. All I can say is that let's go Angel City. Let's get those 3 points this weekend. That's all the time for Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.